Now, Tim, if I was to ask you who's been the best goal kicker in Super Rugby since 2020, who would it be?
Australian or Kiwis or everyone?
Across everyone. The competition.
Oh, God. Do I count? Can I?
You were very good at 1 year.
I had a good year where I probably kicked more than 50%. But no, look, I don't know. Surely Noah's got to be up there.
Noah Lothio is up there. He's kicking at above 87% this year, which is quality, as you were describing, world class. Is there any other names, any other Kiwis?
Any other Kiwis? I always remember Hayden Park. He used to play for the Sunwolves back in the day, and he had like 26 in a row or something. But
it might have even been higher than that at one point in time. He was quality for the Sunwolves. A shout out to the
you've got me. If it's over 87%, I'll eat my hat.
Will Harrison is the man. He's kicked at 87%, his career record, but since Super Rugby AU, so midway through that COVID-affected year, he's kicked at 90%, 94 from 108 strikes. Oof. And I'll tell you what, he wouldn't have kicked too many better than what he delivered in the right at the death, the last play of the game against the Crusaders on Friday night to send it into Golden Point. Will Harrison, unbelievable.
Yeah, look, and that's tough coming off the bench in a crucial game and then kicking goals. Like usually, I know as a kicker, you'd like to have a feel of the game and kind of be involved, but to kind of come on and then have everyone looking at you and then to nail it, that shows he's got a bit of metal about him.
He certainly does. That man, Will Harrison, he's got a heck of a story to tell. He's joining us in a moment, but there's going to be plenty to chew out over the fat with the Melbourne Rebels, great win over the Highlanders. They're up in the top four, your former side. Looking forward to asking you the question, has Australian rugby closed the gap? A fair bit of talk about it at the moment. Another one of those guys that you used to play against, TJ Perenara. 62nd try on the weekend equals Julian Sevilla at the top of the charts with his double during their wins over the Chiefs. And where to next for Les Kisses Reds after a demoralising defeat to Moana Pacifica? And Super W finals just around the corner. So a lot more on the other side of this on the Raw Rugby Podcast.
And joining us on the show now, Will Harrison, the star of the show, the hero, as he described it to me just earlier. Will, congrats please. On the weekend, mate. And, well done.
Yeah, thanks cheers, for joining. Good to be here. Good to be here.
And a former roommate of mine, mate. How'd it feel? Obviously, you know, everyone's still on the high after the weekend and to do it in such a fashion must be pretty exciting.
Yeah, mate, it was awesome, to be honest with you. To be what I've sort of gone through for the last couple of years and to have a moment like that, that's sort of the stuff that you work your ass off for, you know, in those really dark times, you dream of those moments and you envision them, and to get one, my third game back, was pretty special. I've definitely enjoyed it over the last couple of days, but got humbled today with a bit of a gym session with my head of performance just to get me back down to earth and, you know, just refresh this week and get ready for the Chiefs next week.
Will, I know you've downplayed it a little bit there and you can't, you know, it's only the second win of the year, so the Waratahs can't look too far ahead. But we've got to explore a fair bit of that because you come on midway through that second half and you had some really nice touches, ball in hand. But to step up the way that you did from plus 40 out, it might be in a couple of years' time from plus 50 out. But can you run us through your process there and how you're feeling standing over the ball?
Yeah, mate, I think, to be honest with you, I was pretty calm. All I was just trying to focus on was my breathing and just getting really grounded. And with my goal kicking, I've got a pretty clear process. So that's all I was just going through in my head, just my process, what I needed to get through. And, you know, I was really confident because I was striking the ball pretty well in the warm-up. And it's well inside my range. So I knew I could do it. I just knew I just couldn't think about the outcome, just more focus on the process. And, you know, to have a bit of time while they were checking in the TMO just to really control my breathing, I think that helped me, to be honest with you. So it was good.
Hara, it's not easy. I know as a former awful kicker, coming off the bench and actually having to line up, because as you said, you're hitting the ball well in the warm up, but that's probably an hour and 20 odd, you know, before actually having to line up. Like, as you say, you have said you stick to the process, but like, that's pretty tough. Yeah.
Yeah. I think luckily I was sort of like into the game. If you get on there pretty fresh and, you know, you've got those, that sort of anxiety in the air, that's when you get a bit nervous. But I was, you know, 25 minutes into a match, I was a bit fatigued. And so I was feeling pretty loose. And I obviously had two conversions beforehand to get my radar working and just to feel what was coming off the boot. So, like I said, I was pretty calm and confident just because of how the half unfolded, having a few opportunities. But, you know, I'm sure if that was my first kick of the night, I would have been shitting myself for sure.
So you're 94 from 108 since your career record, which is just unbelievable, 87%, 90% since the Super Rugby AU comp. Early on in your kicking career, your career, there was a couple of wobbles. You probably missed a few that you might have hoped that you would have kicked previously. What changed, and how have you kept it going over the last 2 years, given all the injury setbacks that you've had?
I think the one thing that, funny enough, helped me was COVID. You know, during COVID, when the lockdowns, I was spending every day down at Latham just to get out of my house to kick. And I've always kicked sort of well growing up, but I never really had a process. And even when I felt like I was getting into Super Rugby initially, I was just sort of just going with it and just hoping for the outcome. And I sort of just worked on a few things during COVID, and I had so much opportunity, like so much free time just to kick. And I just sort of found sort of a four-step sort of guide that I've just stuck to ever since. And, you know, it's been consistent enough to be able to get consistent contact on the footy. And, you know, I sort of know if I can tick three of those four boxes, the ball's got a pretty good chance of getting in. So, yeah, I think to answer your question, just having so much time during COVID to work on my game.
And, yeah, it's clearly working, Harrow. I'm interested to know your tactics in Golden Point. Obviously, I think the Waratahs went down in over in Fiji there. What are you trying to do? Are you trying to kick off? Are you trying to receive? Is it all territory based? Are you then playing for a penalty? Are you playing for a try? Obviously, you decided to just do a drop goal and do the harder route. But what's the team tactics in those kind of in that period?
Yeah, the message was pretty clear, and I think because the Crusaders had a man down, we knew if we could dominate territory, it could be pretty difficult for them to get out of their own end. So once we won the kickoff, we wanted to go long and just any opportunity we had, sort of that back 50, just keep plugging corners or go to contestable and smashing them there, which we executed. And I was sort of saying anywhere within 50, we can play a bit of footy and sort of hope for a penalty, but anything back 50, let's just play more territory-based.
Yeah, you could clearly see that this was a side that's been to Golden Point before, and I think that probably helped you against the Crusaders with those tactics. Have you had a sweeter moment on a footy field than kicking and landing that drop goal in front of friends and family, the Prime Minister, the former Prime Minister John Howard and the 2014 Super Rugby Champions 10 years on?
No, I don't think that can be beaten, mate. It's pretty, like, it's obviously can be beaten, but for now that's probably been the highlight of my footy career for sure. It was crazy. Proper cloud nine after, that's for sure.
The phone would have been lighting up afterwards. Have you gone through all the messages?
Yeah, I tried to get through that quickly so I could just sort of get back and enjoy it. But I was just more, you know, I was just really thankful for especially the people that have, you know, stuck through with me throughout, you know, this last couple of years especially. Like, there's people that can sort of jump on the bandwagon, but you know the ones that have always been with you. So I just took my time to really appreciate the people that have, you know, been in my corner and have continuously backed me, even though, you know, we've gone through some tough times there, and to have their support the whole way through, and they know who they are. You know, it was special to do that one for them for sure.
Mate, that's awesome to hear. And like, talk us through, you know, obviously a couple of years out with injury. How did that affect your confidence or your self-belief heading into the new season? I know, you know, we were roommates in 2020 for the Wallabies, and then since then, there's been a lot of other guys who have kind of stood up during your injury layoff. And I know that must have, you know, probably irritated you to a sense, but then, you know, yeah, did it hurt your confidence? Did it hurt your self-belief? What kind of journey did you go on in the last few years?
Yeah, it's been a crazy journey since being in the Hunter Valley with you, mate, to be honest with you. And I probably, you know, from there, I didn't expect things unfold the way they did. And initially I sort of struggled with that for sure, like seeing other blokes get their opportunity and take full front of it. You know, it was tough, but I think I've always had the self-belief that I can do it and play at that level. It's more, I guess, just knowing that I've, you know, worked extremely hard over these last 2 years. So even though I haven't had much opportunity to train and I like haven't had a pre-season since 2020 uninterrupted, I knew I had the footy to do it and I knew I've worked hard enough, you know, to perform at this level. So and like you said, there's been blokes that have had opportunity and taken it, but I know I've been competing against those blokes my whole life. So to use that as a bit of a form guide measuring stick, you know, I knew if I can get myself right and, you know, get myself back playing continuous footy, you know, I can compete with the rest of the field. So as I said, it's been a pretty tough time, but it's good to be back and playing consistent footy.
Well, we might come back to a little bit more of that in a second. I just want to ask, did you think about ever giving it away? Because some of the injuries that you suffered were just horrific. It was almost 2 years ago that you suffered that horrific blow down at Super Round in Melbourne against the Chiefs. And then there was just continual setback after setback, and it was 707 days between Super Rugby matches. Tell us how many physio appointments that you really had to go through, and because I know it's a large number. And did you think about this could be it?
Didn't cross my mind once, mate. Footy's been my sort of thing since I was 4 years old. So there's nothing that's going to, like, I'd have to be proper ruled out. You know, someone had to drag me out for me to give it up, to be honest. So no, I had a massive fire. If anything, it motivated me more to get back there, and especially after that second setback. Like, the first one was hard, but the second one I sort of had a decision straight away to go, righto, like, we can sort of look at this one way, put my head in the sand and drag a lot of people through the mud with me, or I can just, you know, shape up, pump my chest out, have a real positive attitude and just go all in with my rehab. And right then and there, Newcastle over number two against the Newcastle Wildfires, that's sort of the decision I made. And, you know, I just tried to bring a real positive attitude towards my second rehab. And I had just such consistent support through the whole time. And even on my down days, you know, I could rely on other people to pick me up, which was the main thing. So I think to answer your question about the physio appointments, is something crazy, like over 690, I don't know, I can't remember the number off the top of my head, but yeah. I was in the facility more than I was at my home, that's for sure, over the last year or two. So it's good to be back.
Yeah, mate, I'm sure it was. One thing I was a little bit nervous of, I'll be honest, is once you kick that goal, you pretty much got a pile on from a few guys a little bit overweight. And I was like, geez, do they know he's been injured? What's going on there?
And I couldn't breathe, eh? I was like, get off me. Like, I was obviously stoked initially, but then when Lockie Swinnan jumped on me and a few of the other boys, I was like, oh my god, I'm bloody squished here. So
yeah, they're not the most coordinated blokes.
I was like, Swinnan, get off me. So no, it was pretty funny there. Good shot.
It was obviously scenes of jubilation and whatnot. And one thing that I probably have a bone to pick with you guys is I played for, you know, 15 seasons Super Rugby, and I beat the Crusaders once. The disrespect you have for history and for the greatest club team of all, it's what is it? Are you calling them your bunny now? Are you letting them know that this is, you can chalk this up as a win?
I don't know. There's just every time we've matched it with the Crusaders, we sort of know we're sort of their bogey team. You know, and ever since growing up watching, you know, the Waratahs Crusaders matches, I remember the Tars getting the edge of them a lot, you know, a lot of times. So yeah, I don't know. I don't know what it is, but the boys just love facing them. We always seem to get up for it. And I made my debut against the Tars back in against the Crusaders back in 2020 in Nelson, and you know, that wasn't a great day, but we were in the fight there for sort of 60 minutes, and we had confidence, but they just sort of ran home in the end. But yeah, I don't know what's going on there.
Mark Nwanganu to ask him, made his debut, I think, on that same match, scoring
and
a
belly.
Double. And so it's some fair talent that ran in out under Rob Penny, who's now, of course, with the Crusaders. Hey, tell us, what's Matt Timur like as a roommate? Because we touched upon it. It was back in that COVID-affected year of 2020. You were up in Cessnock, the Hunter Valley region, a nice part of the world. But what was it like? Give us some secrets into living with Matt.
Well, mate, firstly, it was sort of intimidating when I found out he was my roommate. Like, he was a freak when I was growing up watching him play. I used to love watching him carve up for the Brumbies and stuff. So it was intimidating. But as soon as I walked in the door, I think I walked into him and Nick White sharing a bottle of red. So I was like, oh, here we go. We're in for something. He's a bloke that loves his wine and loves his music. So I was happy about the music thing. I had the shock of the life. I nearly shit myself when the alarm went off at 5 a.m. the next morning. I think it was Bruno Mars or something playing. And I was like, what's going on here?
It was Bruno.
So, mate, he's organised. That's what I like, an organised, clean roomie. And with great chat, we watched a few sports docos together. We've got the opportunity to do it again. More than happily jump on Pup's room.
If only I was good enough to make the Wallabies, but.
Hey, so the Chiefs is next. You're going to have a week off. You're going to return on Sunday. Your season, like, there's still a lot to play for, a couple of wins, but the top eight, certainly still a chance. What were the conversations like with Darren Coleman shortly after full-time when you get in the change rooms? Is it the Darren Coleman from 2 months ago, he said, we might have a dozen beers because you've got to celebrate the ones because you don't know when your next win's coming? Or was it, hey, we'll enjoy this, but we've got to make sure that when we come back that we hit the ground running, because the Chiefs is obviously a really tough proposition in 10 days' time in Sydney?
Under the circumstances and the win it was, I think initially everyone was sort of excited, and we had the 2014 team in there. So I think we just want to enjoy the moment, sing the team song, have a few beers. And it was good to see DC with his tail up. He had a smile from ear to ear. And it was good to see, because he's been under pressure at the moment. But to see that pressure relieved, I think, was awesome. But then it was, pretty evident after we left the change room, we all got a message. And it was just about enjoying the next couple of days. But, it's an important week for us. It's not a holiday. It's time to, mentally refresh, because it has been a tough month of footy for us. But just get our body right and like you said, hit the ground running, because we, the next 3 weeks, I think we play the Chiefs, then we go the Canes, who are unbeaten away, and then we come back to play the Brumbies at home. So it's going to be tough, and we still haven't played our best footy yet. So I think if we can, start putting some more consistent performances together and play more of an 80-minute game, we back ourselves to compete with anyone. And we're just slowly building. We've had a few tight losses, and it's the comp's so tight at the moment. Anything can really happen. You see the Rebels jump up to fourth. You saw Moana beat the Reds on the weekend. It's just sort of, it's crazy, to be honest with you. And we know we're in the fight. We just got to keep playing consistently. And we know that, like I said, we can match with any team. So it's an exciting time. I'm definitely keen for it. And, it's a pretty sick matchup for us against the Chiefs. We had a tight game against them at home last year, so it'd be good to come up against them.
Yeah, opportunity to come up against Damian McKenzie, one of the most electric tens in the world at the moment. Hey, was there any conversations with the? I'm sure there were, but the 2014 class that came in the change rooms afterwards, did they have any comments to make? I know that Dave Dennis was there, Michael Hooper, guys that you see probably quite often, but then others like Adam Ashley Cooper came in. And what were some of the conversations that were taking place in the stands at the Sydney Football Stadium?
Well, I think they had an early kickoff for the Paddo win, so they had a few beers under their belt before the times they got in the change room. But they were just happy, and it was just so sick to see everyone stoked. There's, physio staff, from that 2014 team in there that I knew, doctors that I knew, and just to see all the boys just so excited, for us. And I think they were just proud of our performance, but also just to do it for them on the anniversary of their win. It was huge. And to get them all in there singing the song together, it was, it was something that I'll never forget for sure. And hopefully something they won't forget either, because it was a pretty sick moment.
It was a sick moment. I spoke to Stephen Hoyles actually before this, and he told me that you said in the sheds afterwards that Bernard's kick was cute, but try doing a drop kick beat the Crusaders. Is that confirmed or
that's a load of piss?
Are you sure?
I don't know what Hoyles.
He said he's got video evidence, but he said no, mate. Harrow was going around saying, you know, Bernard's kick was great, sure, but you know, try a drop goal.
I don't know, mate. In front of, you know, close to 80,000 in a Super Rugby final, or you know,
it was in front though.
12,000 in at Allianz. It's not a comparison there, I think.
It was very special, mate. It was good to watch. I very, very rarely go for the Tars. I won't lie to you, as a former Brumby, a Queenslander, and but it was really good. It was awesome to see someone who's gone through a lot, mate. Yeah, kind of get that reward, because it doesn't always happen that way, does it?
Nah. Yeah, it doesn't. It doesn't. And I wasn't expecting it to. To be honest, the way Taino was playing, you know, I thought he was controlling the game really well. So when I got the call up to get on there with 25 to go, I was a little bit shocked, but I was keen. So, you know, for it to pan out the way it has, like I said, mate, all along it's been a dream come true. I've worked so hard for these moments, and to finally get one like that, it's special. Something I'll never forget, but, you know, I think it's sort of time now to park it and get ready for the next couple of weeks of footy, because it's such an important time for us as a club. So
yeah, it certainly is. Well, you got John Howard out of his seat, and that's probably no mean effort at his age of life. Hey, Will, so good to have you join and be able to reflect on your journey, but also just be able to acknowledge someone that's gone through so much and then come out the other end and have an awesome matchup. Best of luck for the rest of the season, and we're sure greater things lay ahead for you too.
Cheers, boys. Pop, yeah, enjoy that. Enjoy your Reds, mate.
Yeah, thanks, mate. Well done, Harrow. It's honestly, it's awesome to see. And I'm sure there's, you said it was a career highlight so far. There's plenty more years left, mate, so you'll make more, eh? So all the best, mate.
Cheers, legends. Appreciate it, boys.
Great to have Will Harrison on the pod, mate. I remember, Christy, in 2020, it was a COVID year, and we were over in New Zealand, and we had this opposed session before we played the All Blacks. It was, you know, kind of a 1v2s or a probables, possibles. And Hunter Paisami would have absolutely belted Harrow maybe three times, broke his nose, like winded him and everything. And God, he just got up, kept on going. And we actually spoke about it a lot that time. I think there was a little bit of a beef between the Queenslanders and New South Wales boys, but he's made of the right stuff, Harrow. It's genuinely nice to see that, you know, he's a tough cookie. And yeah, I think it's one of those ones when you see him hit that drop goal, you're like, oh, he's one of the good guys. It's good to see.
I do recall that being a point of conversation, and I'm not sure if it ever came out who did put that hit on, but yeah, it was known that it was a broken nose.
Yeah, and I can tell you, but it was a broken nose after being winded, and then after maybe twisting his ankle, like it was brutal. And I was injured at the time, so I'm watching it. I'm like, phew. Jeez, I've had my ribs rearranged by Hunter a couple of times, and I was glad I was watching that one. But no, it's cool. It's nice to see a guy like that, a good rugby man who's tough, who's made of the right stuff. It's really good seeing, you know, them succeed like that.
Yeah, and I know that there was a bit of talk on social media a couple of weeks ago going, oh, look, surely, you know, the Waratahs, they must be paying all these guys so much. I can tell you that Will Harrison sacrificed so much to stay at the Waratahs this year to re-sign, having barely played in a couple of years. It's testament that he's still there. Tell me, do you think there's a place, it's probably premature to talk about him being in the Wallabies conversation, but there's got to be a place for sharpshooters like him in the game in Australian rugby. And if you're, you know, I think back to like a Mike Harris who came on and slotted a goal against Wales, might have been 2012, and he just had the ball on a string for about a season. Well, Will Harrison's had the ball on a string for 3 or 4 years, and he's just got such a simple technique. And I see him at training all the time. And I said to Shannon Fraser, who's a skills coach at the Waratahs last week, and I went behind and I was catching a ball there, and I said, this guy just doesn't miss ever, does he? And he acknowledged, yeah, he's unbelievable. And that all came to fruition on the weekend.
Yeah, look, I do think there's a place for it. You know, in an ideal world, you have your starting 10 who's kicking that and you know, sure, but there is a place, and we've seen the bench evolve in the last few years, or, you know, last maybe 5 years. But if you look back to 2021 in the Lions test, Mornay Steyn on the bench, you know, or, you know, Mornay Steyn, and I've just actually read Rassie's book, and by read, I mean listen to, because I can't read, but I've just listened to his book, and he spoke about he knew it was going to come down to a kick or two and having a sharpshooter on the bench who can slot those goals. And it's often an interesting bench position, the kind of inside back, because it's probably the last position that goes on a lot of the time. But I think tactically, maybe adding, you know, if you've got a sharpshooter there and the game is, you know, within a score or two, it's definitely worth a think, I think.
We'll park the Waratahs for a moment, but they're going to have a good week off before a really difficult few weeks ahead. And it's a difficult few weeks ahead for all the Super Rugby franchises in Australia. There's so many more Trans-Tasman fixtures over the next month. Let's talk about one that did win first up, though, which was the Rebels up against the Highlanders on Saturday evening down in Melbourne. The Rebels, 47-31 winners over the Highlanders. Did you see it coming?
I did, actually. I had a friend of mine who messaged me asking me for tips, and I was like, oh, man, I generally don't know if I'm allowed to bet on rugby yet. It's I think
you're too close to it.
I think I am. I'm not sure. But anyway, I think the Rebels were paying $3 or whatever. And I just said, mate, being at the Rebels, the last, you know, three games, we beat the Highlanders twice. And at home, I was like, man, I think the Rebels will win this. And I thought that was their best performance of the year, to be honest. I've said a few times on the pod, you know, they won and like, oh, it was all right or whatever. This was their best performance. And I think having guys like Kellaway, having Josh Kemeny back, just added a bit to their squad. And then obviously, you know, Lancaster scoring three helps as well. But nah, I thought that was their best performance for sure.
80-minute effort, that's probably the thing. We've seen bits and pieces, you know, the odd 30-minute cameo where they've scored four tries and suddenly catapulted their way back into matches. But, yeah, they were really impressive. Darby Lancaster, you made mention of his name, three tries. Wow. Like, I've seen him play a lot of sevens, and we've seen him over the last couple of weeks. It didn't shock me how good he was, but he is a serious talent. Who does he remind you of? What do you like about him in these early stages of his career?
There was a little bit of Corey Tool. I know Corey's very much still in the beginning of his career, but just that kind of finishing touch is really good. And one thing I'm liking a lot about the wingers that we're talking about in Australian rugby now, with Lancaster, with Corey Tool, but even at the Waratahs, Peach and remind me of the
last one. Tristan Riley on the weekend.
Riley, yeah. They're physical. They're all physical guys, and I don't know if that's because a lot of them spent time in the sevens, but they're all really, really physical, and I just think that's good to have, particularly at the once you get to Super Rugby level, that you're physically ready for this. You know, you're not going to get bumped off all the times, or you can actually get a breakdown steal. And that's something that I'm really liking about this. And I think maybe that the pathway is getting some of those wingers in the sevens, having to defend, having to use breakdown, just, yeah, adds a little bit, because it's not all, you know, just finishing tries and chasing kicks anymore. There is a lot of contact area. So that's exciting me a little bit about, our outside backs.
Yeah, well, Hamish Bidwell wrote a yarn for The Rule last week on similar subject about the importance of sevens in developing players. And we know across the ditch that guys like Rico Ioane, Caleb Clark, they spent time in the sevens program, and they – I remember Rico Ioane was, I think, World Rugby Breakthrough Player of the Year, and that comes off the back of time spent elsewhere. I liked how the use of the bench. I'm enjoying the fact that Taniela Tupou is coming on and making such an impact, and it was nice to see him not hobble through a game or look like he's on the field on the ground two or three times. He really is starting to find his feet, I think, now at the Rebels.
Yeah, and I think it's a really smart utilization of the bench and the people they have. And like, and to be honest with you, I like Sam Talakai starting as well. Like he is a very, very good player. Like he just seems to be improving. I spoke to a coach over here and he's like, mate, he's probably my, you know, that's probably my three and reserve tight head for the Wallabies. And I was like, it's not far off. Like I think just thinking about it a little bit differently, it's not always the case of, you know, your best 15 and then, you know, your backups come up off the bench, but you actually utilize Taniela in the later parts of the game against, you know, he's got a physical presence on the field where he can really change that. But yeah, I'm enjoying that. I actually, you know, and God, I hate going back to the Tars, but they utilize their bench a lot more on the weekend. And I think that's really cool. We just spoke to Harrow, obviously, and the confidence he would gain, the confidence, was it Teddy Wilson?
It was Jack Grant. And 30 minutes. And how he got Will Harrison in the position to land his goal was really mature rugby, wasn't it?
It was. And even a couple of the forwards as well, just like that time against the Crusaders under pressure. You know, it's great when it works, obviously, and they've won the game, but you can't discount how important that is for a player's development. And I feel like that's a nice little growth we've seen in Darren Coleman and his selection and then his tactical changes, and just shows that he trusts those guys off the bench. It's good to see.
Yeah, well, the bench is the weapon. And I remember talking to Andrew Blades, the former World Cup winning prop who went into coaching with the Wallabies, might have spent time with you as well at a test level. Departed from the Waratahs as their GM after about 24 months in the role midway through last year. But I had a conversation with him, and you were talking around, you know, not long ago, how many scrums there are in either half, and the benefit of bringing on your strongest scrummager at times in the second half, because or more powerful ball running player as a result. And you think about Angus Bell, he came off, came on at about the 33 minute mark, I remember, a few weeks ago before he got injured. And that's an example of just knowing when to bring on a player and when not to. You mentioned Josh Kemeny's name not long ago. Yeah. He's playing outstanding rugby, back from injury, but he's also heading overseas shortly to Northampton. Lockie Swinton's heading over to Bordeaux in France at the end of this season as well. There's a bit of talk made Ned Hannigan looking for a spot overseas too. Those three guys are now developed, proven super rugby players. You would have spent time with Lockie Swinton as well, I imagine. These sorts of guys, you don't necessarily want to be losing them as they're getting into their mid to late 20s. They just start to be – they look like they're actually now ready for the international stage, where a few years ago they probably weren't.
Yeah, they look like men, just quite simply, all of them. And I think we – like, you know, a tendency in Australia to kind of look for our – search for our new superstar, and sure, it works every now and then. But for guys, particularly in the pack around the loose forwards, you know, these guys take a little bit of time to develop. And you look at Ned Hannigan, you know, he kind of came out of the blocks quite quick. And then there was just this kind of like, oh, we're done with him. You know, like he's not what we thought he was or whatever. And then he's just quietly gone about his business. He's grown, he's improved. And, mate, he – on the weekend, the amount of times like he would use footwork and dominate that contact, he might not make a break like, say, Swinno when he was scoring, but he's just got, you know, some great footwork, some real good, you know, lateral movement into that, winning the breakdown, getting guys on the front foot. I just think it is nice to see that. And sometimes I think we might need to have a little bit more grace for a lot of guys that realizing they are on their journey as well. And, you know, they're not the finished product, and nor should they be, but they're going to keep on improving. And it would be nice if we didn't get too impatient with them. And, you know, it's a little bit sad to see them leave Australian rugby. But if, you know, if this ghetto law is potentially getting scrapped, could come to our benefit as well.
We'll talk about that in a second. I made a reference today in a story that I wrote this afternoon around Asafa Omua, who is just so destructive for the Hurricanes. And he came first on the scene in the under-20s for New Zealand in 2016-17, scoring tries for fun, a bit like Taniela Tupou did. And it's only now, many years after being in an All Blacks touring squad in 2017, it's only now, as a 26-year-old, I think he is, as a co-captain at times, that he's actually starting to fulfill his potential. And that's the proof that maybe Australia needs to copy, swallow, that you can't necessarily rush forwards from the outset?
No, definitely not. And look, that it is different in New Zealand. You have a different environment when you have a lot more depth. And so over here, we are often looking for new guys, and people get rushed through. I've mentioned a couple times about, like, say, personally, my journey. I played Super Rugby at 18, and then a couple of years later, I was playing in the under-20s and played against a guy like Aaron Cruden. He hadn't played Super Rugby. The year later, he's dominating Super Rugby. He's playing test matches, and I was still kind of picking up pieces from a lot of lessons I didn't learn. And yeah, I probably look back at that now as someone who's a bit older and realize, you know, like there's a time there to just kind of keep your head down and go through the age group, play a bit of club rugby, NPC, AIC, whatever we call it here. And yeah, I just think just having a higher tolerance level for guys, particularly who are in their early 20s, even mid 20s, to grow, you know, that they're still learning as well, and not just kind of throwing it out the back and looking for another guy. So, yeah, it is good to see those guys. I hope they're not lost to our game, but it's a complicated market, I think, as we said before, with so many teams and struggling for position.
I remember having a beer with Dave Rennie at the end of 2022 in Wales and Cardiff, and a few of us that were on the touring party had a drink with him and a burger, and he was talking about Noah Lolesio and his journey, and he was saying, you know, compare him to Richie Mwanga. Richie Mwanga's got 80 games, you know, before he's playing an international match, and that's at, you know, NPC level into the Crusaders, into the All Blacks. Yeah. Noah Lolesio probably played about 10 games for the Brumbies in his first year and then ends up playing for the Wallabies. And I kind of was like, well, hang on, Dave, like, you're the one who picked him, but there weren't actually that many options either, given the injuries that were coming about. But it does point and speak of the challenges that Australian rugby has, particularly with no definitive third-tier model at the moment.
Yeah, definitely. And it's also the market forces at play with guys wanting to go overseas because of financial incentives. You know, you want to keep the young guys here so you give them more time, and it is complicated, and it happens for a reason. The very fact that Dave, you know, acknowledges it and knows that he's also a part of it as well, and at the end of the day, Dave's got to keep his job, you know, or wants to keep his job. So he's picking who he thinks might be the best, you know, at that point in time, even if he knows that maybe the best thing for Noah would be to, you know, to run as 24th man or kind of, you know, just be around the environment and slowly grow. So I wish there was a quick fix. There isn't, unfortunately, but it is interesting to just kind of note a few things as you go along because, hopefully in time we could improve them slowly.
So the Rebels up into fourth spot. They've leapfrogged the Chiefs for the moment. They've got a bye, but wow, they've got a really tough month and 5 weeks to follow. They've got the Crusaders away, the Blues at home, the Reds away, the Chiefs at home, and then they play the Brumbies away and Fiji on a Saturday afternoon in Fiji. Like, that is a seriously tough road ahead for them. So fair play to them getting 3 from 3. They've done what the Reds haven't been able to do, and that's bank a couple of games where you should be winning if you want to consider yourself a top 5, top 6 sort of team. Before we get to the Reds for the moment, are you shocked? Are you surprised? What's your actual emotion around the Rebels and your feeling towards them, given everything that's still hanging in the air, the limbo surrounding their future?
Oh, look, I'm obviously elated. They have had, if you compare them to the Waratahs, their draw this year so far has been, a little bit easier or more favourable. But in saying that, you can only play the teams who are put in front of you, and they've won games that they should have won, and they've done it. So I think that's great. The really exciting thing for me is I felt they only hit their straps on the weekend. I thought the other wins that they had against Moana, against the Waratahs in Sydney, I didn't feel they were at their best. They didn't have that kind of flow that they did last year, particularly in attack. And for me, seeing a guy like Callaway come back on the weekend, he really added an extra dimension to their attack. So it is good. It's amazing. You know, obviously we're going to keep you know, talking about what's going on off the field and how that impacts them. And look, they're doing their job. They're in the top four. You know, there's still a long way to go, but you can't doubt what they've done so far.
No, you can't. And that win done with a misfiring line out with some troubles with Jordan Willisi once again, but and a pretty average looking conversion from Carter Gordon first up before he managed to rectify that pretty well. So. One thing we probably didn't see coming, though, was the Reds slipping up to Minor Pacifica. 17-14, they go down, and it comes at a really costly situation. We're recording this Monday evening. At the moment, Fraser McWright, Tate McDermott, both talking to the Sanchez judiciary about their ugly second-half incidents, which just unfortunately summed up a really miserable evening in the North Island of New Zealand.
Yeah, it was. And I'll be honest, I didn't watch the game live because I thought it was going to be a flogging. I just was like, you know, Reds, we'll get them here. And seems like some of those boys had the same mindset as I did. But, yeah, look, really, really disappointing. There are games in this competition you must win, particularly if you have ambitions of the top, you know, get into the finals. And with no disrespect to Minor, the Reds should have won that game. And to see those, you know, red cards in the second half by two of their most experienced players, I think it'll be something that they'll be, they'll be really, really disappointed by. And, you know, look, it might cost them in a few weeks to come as well.
Have you been a part of games yourself where, and we saw so many drop balls, guys from like Sarah Uru, Josh Fluke, someone who's had a great year throwing the ball into touch and having a – he's probably his worst game that I can remember. Jock Campbell struggled as well with a couple of his decisions. It compounds. And have you felt and seen games where the team and some of the core leaders just – try a bit too hard or the frustration boils over and they do something that they probably wouldn't usually?
Yeah, look, and I think that's the right correct point with frustration. If you look at Tate, when he has that swinging arm, it's come after he's been, you know, fended away and, you know, maybe what he thought was a little bit higher and it was just a rush of blood thing. And so, you know, I don't want to look into it too much, but God, it's costly. You know, losing your halfback, your captain, having to bring on another guy, and then, you know, you got the sacrificial lamb on the wing having to go, and then Fraser going as well. Nothing went well for them. Even I think it was before the end of the first half, you know, they had a tap move and the bloody ref gets in the way. So like it was one of those nights. Good teams, or, you know, great teams will win that. They might say it was a poor performance, but they'll win that by a point or two. So, look, I'm sure that's something that they'll be looking at. And, you know, once again, it's probably been a little bit disrespectful to Moana, who played well, who deserved it, had a lot of scrum dominance that typically you probably wouldn't have expected. So, yeah, it's a slip up from the Reds, that's for sure.
Well, we had Sakopi Kepu on the podcast last week, and I'm sure he would have been ecstatic with that outcome, a late William Havili try and conversion. And
sorry, yeah, on that, on Havili's kick, he obviously ran the clock down to end the game. Do you know what happened with the Crusaders Waratahs game? Like, was there time on the clock where was it Fihaki or was it the fly half?
It was the fly half. The replacement fly half would be Rahana, I think.
Rahana.
There's Rahana. Yeah. It's a massive slip up for what's happened there, and that happens just, you know, a couple of hours after Moana Pacifica did what you should be doing, which is not allowing an opposition to get a kick restart. And the controversial moment, but Nick Berry quite, you know, said that, you know, you've got this amount of time and he's kicked it just beforehand. So, yeah, huge stuff up. Rob Petty must have been just going, oh, dear. Like, that's a, you know, we've just let 4 points slip through our fingers like that.
Yeah, it was costly. It's an interesting one. I actually saw there was a game up in the Premiership, the English Premiership, where the kicker has, you know, 60 or 90 seconds, whatever it is, to kick the goal, and he was from in front and he was just waiting. And the ref actually said, it's unsportsman, like, you better kick it. Like, you got to kick it. And, you know, he goes on and kicks it. But it is a, like, you know, there's a, yeah.
It also happened in the rugby sevens in Hong Kong, where Henry Hutchison was told to put the ball down. He said, I don't have to.
Yeah, and that's right, under the post. He's just waiting. Yeah.
And I think it was Jacobs, the South African referee, had to almost swallow his pride and go, fair enough, you know, like there isn't actually a law.
And if you're a young fly half who's coming off the bench, you know, you have that, you're feeling that pressure, that anxiety. And when the coach is, when the ref, sorry, is doing that, like he's probably not old enough to go, no, mate, I know the rules. You know, if he doesn't kick the goal and then he gets penalized,
he didn't even need to kick the goal.
Yeah, you could literally just leave it, and then it's a scrum, and then they win the game. So it's a it's a tough one. I don't know if that there was nothing. Nick Berry was completely, you know, he controlled it well, but there's probably a couple of missed moments there.
Oh, totally. So the Reds have got a really tricky next 3 weeks. Highlanders first up, and then they take on the Blues and the Crusaders. They're now three difficult games. You'd still hope that you're good enough to beat the Highlanders, but you've put so much more pressure on yourself off the back of letting a game slip against perhaps Western Force, losing by a point against the Brumbies, which was a game that was there, ripe for the taking, ripe for the picking, and then once again against Moana Pacifica, where you're leading late in the match despite having two men sent off, a replacement red card with Mac Reilly coming on after the 20 minutes for Tate McDermott in the 46th minute. He went off, and then later Fraser McWright. So, oh so costly, and I dare say that Les Kiss will be, it's a week off now. They had their bye the previous week, and you kind of feel like that might have actually come at a time when maybe they didn't necessarily need it, that they might have wanted a win after having two defeats.
Yeah, look, so they've had four losses now, one in extra time against the Hurricanes. You'd probably say, listen, their performance was a good performance. And then they backed it up a week later at home when they beat the Chiefs. And then they lose to the Force over in Perth, and then the Moana. They're the two games that you probably look back and going, you know, that's the big slip up. They can clearly get up for the big games. You know, even against the Brumbies, that was a good performance from the Reds. That was a good game of rugby. There was nothing in it. And then, just that kind of, you know, just trying to get some consistency, which is, I think, is something they've lacked at the start of the year. The good thing is they've got two home games ahead of them. So, yes, tough teams, but I really think they should be putting 40 on the Highlanders. I do. I don't think the Highlanders have been great so far, and I think the Reds, they should be backing themselves in that game. So hopefully it helps. Being at home will help, but so a little bit of soul searching, I think, to do over there to get that consistency.
Well, I'll tell you what, 40 points when you're potentially losing Tate McDermott and Fraser McWright, that's a.
Can I retract that statement? Because
I don't think an editing is possible. It's live. But hey, one thing that helps them is Kalani Thomas did get a fair bit of game time as a result on the weekend, coming on earlier than usual. And John Bryant's a not a bad player, a junior Wallaby last year, and he'll get more minutes, I'm sure, going forward. Liam Wright, potential to slip into seven himself, and maybe that allows a Cormac Daly to go to 6-2. So some options up his sleeve. Hey, there was a report in Rugby Pass on Sunday evening which suggested that Joe Schmidt was going to get his way, that the Wallabies' eligibility policy was going to be blown up, essentially, and allow for him to be able to pick from overseas. Look, I've spoken to Phil Wolf from Rugby Australia, the CEO. He says that's inaccurate. And before that, I'd spoken to other sources who similarly said that, if anything, Rugby Australia is going to be tightening up their eligibility policy, not loosening it. How do you feel kind of hearing that bit of news?
Hearing the news that might not be true is very disappointing from my point of view. I've said it, and I stand by it. I just think, at the risk of diminishing our local, you know, Super Rugby talent and all that, I just think we need the Wallabies performing. That is our top team. That's the team that it's the only team in Australian rugby community who the public really care about. You know, like when the Wallabies play the All Blacks, people actually care. When the Rebels are playing the Waratahs, it's, you know, it's only a select few. And for me, I just think we do need to prioritise that. I don't like the idea of going into a fight with one I am, you know, tied behind your back. It just doesn't make sense. You know, the only person who I think should realistically be against that is Matt Giteau, because his name's tied to it. But no, look, I personally, that's my opinion. I'm happy to be proven wrong. But yeah, I just think we can't be handicapping our national team, the one team that probably still has a foothold in the Australian sporting landscape that, you know, that the public actually do care about. I think it's silly.
Yeah, it's something that's not going to go away, this thorny subject, unless you know, the results turn around drastically and quickly, especially before the Lions year next year, where there's probably going to be a little bit more. You know, I can imagine that if Joe Schmidt's concerned about his lock stocks, well, he's going to be knocking on the door of Will Skelton. He's going to be asking the question to Marika Korobetti and Samu Karevi, are you guys fit, eligible, and up for coming back? Because they're massive tournaments that are huge cash cows going forward.
It is a weird one because, you know, the ghetto law traditionally was a 60 cap, 7 years, and then that's been diluted as well. Like I get really frustrated at us saying, oh, the ghetto law, like what is it nowadays? Cause it has changed. It keeps changing in a World Cup year. Like who's going to debate bringing back our best players, particularly in a World Cup year or in a Lions year? It makes no sense. I personally, the ghetto law, when it came back, I was actually the 12 at the time, and I was the one who got moved, you know, to the bench. But that's the way it should be. It should be really hard to play for your country, and we should have our best team, you know, at these particularly showpiece events. So, yeah, but that's how I feel. Like I said, I could be wrong. I have been once before, so we'll see how it goes.
Well, that's yeah. Well, whilst this conversation's all bubbling on in the background, I know that there's one Wallaby who's played at a World Cup who said. Tweeted to text someone saying, look, I might just head back overseas, or I might head overseas, because players want to know what's going on. Player agents want to know what's going on, because it gives everyone a sense of clarity. And I'll tell you what, the Springboks have made it work by winning the last two World Cups by being able to pick elsewhere. I can understand Rugby Australia wanting to tighten it up before a broadcast negotiation. They're speaking to New Zealand. New Zealand's not allowing their players to be picked from overseas. They don't want to dilute the competition. It's already struggled for years and years. It comes back to me about what's the vision for Super Rugby? What's the vision for Australian rugby over the next 3, 5, 10 years? And they've got to be crystal clear about that. And it's not just a decision that can be made, I don't think, by one or two people in a boardroom at Rugby Australia. They need to really speak to, I think, past coaches, like the Checkers of the world, the Rennies, to know whether or not they think that there's enough talent to be able to get the Wallabies where they need to. And if not, how do they fix it? And if those people don't know how to fix it, then you've got to explore picking from overseas, because the Wallabies, as you say, are so important.
But players are already going overseas knowing that the laws will be relaxed. That's just the way it is. Guys are going overseas, like, sure, they've played a couple caps for the Wallabies and they go, you know, I want to go earn more money overseas while I can. The thing that people aren't speaking about enough, in my opinion, is that as soon as you say we the Wallabies are going to scrap the law and we're going to select anyone who is overseas, and this might be our 45 men, you know, pool of players. As soon as you do that, these players actually become less valuable to overseas clubs. I know when I went to Leicester Tigers, I was quite valuable because I did not qualify for the Wallabies whilst I was at Leicester. So during the Six Nations, they knew they would have access to an international player during that period. As soon as the Wallabies say, we have, you know, carte blanche, we can kind of pick anyone from overseas, clubs are now going to go, do I really want to get, let's say, Noah Lolesia, do I really want to sign him when I know he's going to be missing for 18 weeks of the year? You know, like, and so his value goes down a little bit. So for me, I don't think that's spoken about enough. I don't think as soon as we actually get some clarity on this is what we're going to do and not leave it last minute, because players are going to proactively just go. As soon as you actually say, nah, we want it, we want the best players playing for our country, and it probably includes these guys. And as soon as you do that, it might sound mean, but their value diminishes overseas because clubs know they're not going to be available for a third of the season.
You could talk about that for a long time, and I'm sure that there's going to be some that completely agree with you. I probably do tend to agree with you, but I can see the other argument for the time being anyway, particularly in the lead up to a broadcast deal where there needs to be a massive upsurge and uplift in that. Just a couple of quick ones. We'll probably talk around whether or not Australian rugby's closing the gap in a couple of weeks, because I think it's maybe premature. I think this is a big 3 weeks ahead for the five Australian Super Rugby franchises. It's a big one for the Western Force against the Crusaders. This is a game where they need to be able to come out on top, but that'll be difficult against a pack that's now bringing back an Ethan Blackadder, who's always strong over the ball. They'll be, you know, another week on tour. So it's a big one for them. Super W, just want to touch on them quickly. It's, we're going to hopefully get one of the Super W players next week to join the podcast, but semi-finals this weekend for them, and it's been a massive fall from grace from the Queensland Reds side that went down to the Tars last year's runners up. They haven't made the finals. They've missed out. The Waratahs are going to host. They're going to host the Brumbies at the Sydney Football Stadium at Allianz on Friday evening, and before that, the Fijiana Drua hosting the Western Force. So a couple of newcomers to the final series, which is really great to see.
Yeah, it is always exciting in a competition that's, you know, relatively new in its infancy in a sense. It's nice to see that. I know the Tars, I think they won the first four, and the Drua have done added something to it as well. So it's really good to see. So as sad as it is that the Reds aren't in there, I think, you know, to have teams, you know, like the Brumbies come up, it's good for rugby. It's good for women's rugby and for rugby in general.
Yeah, make sure you get along to that. There's the Waratahs, the men's side, aren't going to be playing a game, but it's a home semi-final for the Waratahs women team, and they've been brilliant throughout the competition to date. They're going to make up a lot of the Wallaroos side, which are going to be playing a test match themselves next year. You expect the Drua will be pretty formidable. They beat the Force at home only a couple of weeks ago. And also, the Rebels, the women's Rebels side, a really important breakthrough victory for them against the Fijiana Drua at home last Saturday. So Fair play to the Rebels there.
Yeah, I think the Rebels women's team went a couple of years without actually getting a win, and to turn over the Drua once again, it's a tip of the hat to everyone there, and you can only imagine the men's team operating at a decreased capacity, the women's team would be doing the exact same. So for them to actually get out there and you know, do their talking on the field, it is really good to see.
Totally is. All right, we're going to cover all of that extensively next week, but until then, that's a wrap. Good to talk to you. Good to talk to Will Harrison. So many big subjects at the moment, but it was great to be able to celebrate Harrow and his return, and hopefully it's just the start, the springboard of something much greater.
Yeah, look, as much as I hate the Waratahs, it's you always want them to win for Australian rugby, for the health of Australian rugby, and for a good man like that. Yep, I was cheering. So, yeah, awesome to have him on the show. It's good to hear what he's gone through. And, we can only wish him well going forward.
All right, that's a wrap on the Raw Rugby Podcast. I'm Christy Doran, Matt Tamua joining you as always at the start of every week. We'll be looking forward to round 9 next week. Cheers.
Enjoy.